Tim Winton's new collection of linked short stories called The Turning has just been released in the United States to rave reviews. It's published by Scribner, and I'm very pleased that it brings Tim Winton back to my show today. Hello.
Hi, mate.
You've written 14 books, been shortlisted for the Booker Prize twice, been voted most popular writer in Australia, even been named one of Australia's 100 living national treasures. So why do you think you're not better known in the United States? Is this just an American prejudice against foreign writers? I mean, you even write in English.
It's a big world. You don't make any assumptions. You don't expect, you know, you don't expect things to be the same everywhere you go. And there are all kinds of little warps and wefts and anomalies. So, I mean, I have readers in the States, and I'm glad to have them.
Well, there are other Australian writers who are better known here, like Peter Carey, but he lives here. Mm-hmm. Thomas Keneally set some of his books outside of Australia. That may be a reason that some people will recognize his name. He wrote Schindler's List. But your writing contains many Australian phrases that may be difficult for Americans to understand, like tracky dacks and damper and palms and shags.
Sure, but then, you know, Faulkner and O'Connor and Cormac McCarthy have a language of particularity which everybody else in the world seems to be able to cope with. I don't really know. I mean, I'm quite well read in Canada and in Britain, and I was even in India last year where they were able to understand these things. So I don't think there's any special reason why Americans should find it difficult.
Maybe we're just more insular in some cases. A Boston Globe reviewer said, "You write about people whose troubled lives are belied by their jaunty Aussie slang."
The jaunty Aussie slang. Well, maybe it seems jaunty from the outside. It's pretty dour, really. It's all color and no sweetness sometimes.
And would you call these stories particularly dark? There's a lot of violence here.
There's some grim moments in this collection. It's true, but moments of humor and it's a collection really about people from small towns trying to come to terms with middle age through the sort of memory of what they were like when they were teenagers, I guess.
You're probably best known for your novels, Cloud Street, The Riders, Dirt Music. Mm-hmm. These stories are linked, but did you ever consider telling them as a novel?
Only after the fact, when I looked at it and I thought, hell, it would have been so much easier to write a novel than to have this sort of strange system where the stories are discrete, you know, they stand on their own, but somehow they lean on each other and they obliquely and very roundabout way refer to one another and add something to each other, so they become sort of more than the sum of their parts.
But yeah, that's something you realized after the fact.
Yeah, more than halfway through, put it that way. The kind of experience of the reader finding out about these things sort of incrementally, accidentally, with a sort of sense of duration is very similar to the way that I found out about it as a writer. I was just finding my way.
Well, for example, one of the characters we meet several times in these stories is Vic, sometimes as a teenager, others as a middle-aged man. Now, in a novel, you would just know that you would set up the middle age with the teenage stories, even if you didn't present them in that order. Mm. But where did you start with Vic?
That's a good question. I'd have to think about that. I think I started with him as a boy. And then I guess I wrote a story that was essentially a Vic story where he wasn't called Vic, and I realized after the fact that I was writing about the same guy. So I had to sort of grudgingly acknowledge that, you know, this was the same bloke, and I might as well just give him his own name.
And then you give us another story from Vic's alcoholic father's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are stories from his wife's perspective, partly from his mother's perspective, and people even who aren't named, who were school friends.
So is that how one story leads to another? You've created Vic, and then you think, I wonder what his mother is all about.
Well, in a way, I kind of had to know something of what his mother was all about in order to start writing about him. But never really understanding that she was going to get her own story, if you know what I mean.
Well, several of the stories are about brothers named Frank and Max, mm-hmm. and their situation is almost a Cain and Abel kind of thing. Max yeah. turns out to be even more violent after he almost kills his brother
yeah.
As an adult than he was as a teenager.
Yeah, he's a monster, yeah.
Did his character change as you developed these stories?
Well, it's interesting. That story about the two boys called Sand, where you know Max tries to kill Frank, trying to bury him in a hole.
Although we're not sure whether he's really trying to kill him or whether he's just...
Oh, yeah, he's trying to kill him. Yeah. Take it from me. I wrote that a long time before. That story's, you know, almost 20 years old. And
so these characters stayed with you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody stays with me. Some, you know, some people fall out of story collections and into novels, and then they end up in young adult novels. So I tend to be writing about the same two towns, and these things just, you know, that's just an alternate world for me. It's an imagined world.
There's a lot of violence in these small towns. Do you think there's more violence in small towns, or is it just more obvious because everybody knows everybody else?
I think it's hard to hide all the business of a small town. But if it's small towns based on whaling, tuna fishing, an abattoir, I mean, there's an underlying violence there anyway. But you know, having said that, most towns are based on capitalism, and you know, there's just an undeclared, more discreet, more lightly perfumed violence at work there.
I'm assuming that these towns are based on the towns that you know because they're set in Western Australia, and you're from Western Australia.
Sure, and I grew up in small towns. I went to school in a place like Angeles, which is the town most recurrent in the book.
You invented that town.
Oh, I invented its name. It's those people who are from that town, they know all about it. I was in that town and gave a reading for the first time in 15 years, just recently, and people were certain that they knew all the people in the stories, even if they were completely mistaken.
Because you are kind of drawing from them, but these are not Romana Clay type stories.
No, I'm writing about a milieu, I guess, and it's something that I know a fair bit about from having lived there, but I wouldn't be stupid enough to write about anybody directly, you know.
The title story involves Max, the guy who almost killed his brother. In this case, he beats his wife, and it's told from her perspective, Raylene's mm-hmm. perspective. Does a story like that evolve from asking yourself why someone would allow herself to be abused?
Yeah, I guess in a sense it came from having lived in a town of 600 people, which was a lobster fishing town, you know, as rough as guts, a really tough place, very misogynistic. And a lot of people were living in caravan parks or in a trailer park, as you would say here. And I used to see people living these lives, and I used to wonder about the women, how they were living. Many of them were living insupportable lives, and I just wondered how they could endure.
There's a religious component to that story, and you've talked in the past about your religious feelings. Do you think that your religious beliefs manifest themselves in your work?
Oh, I think it's impossible for them not to. Anybody's worldview, anybody's cultural background, anybody's gender, even. I mean, it's impossible not to drag with you in the slipstream of a story, you know, your world and your worldview.
But in your earlier work, I got the feeling that most of your characters were seeking some kind of grace and redemption. Less so in these stories. You've said that they're more about regret than promise.
Sure. I think that's a kind of time of life. I mean, there's so many of the people in these stories are middle-aged, and life's so short, and there's so many things to regret, you know. And sometimes promise isn't the right word, you know. I think there are moments of grace. They're just a little more splintery and difficult and offensive, I think, than some previous ones.
You also have gone public, even though you have a reputation for kind of fighting off the elements of fame, but you were thrust into the Australian public eye a couple of years ago when you helped block the construction of a large marina resort Was that difficult for you to do, to go public that way?
Yeah, I sort of became the world's least successful recluse for a couple of years. You know, it was, and also I'm not a team player. I've spent 25 years making stories for a living and never had to have a job, and there I was as part of some kind of community concern, and we were banding together doing something impossible, and as luck would have it, actually winning. It was a remarkable experience.
With an ironic side to it, you had received money from the government for a literary prize, and you donated that money in a campaign against the government's approach to something.
Yeah, and the premier of the state had to pass the check and then have it passed back. It was bizarre. It was fun. It was a great political moment. You don't get these opportunities very often.
We don't think of Australia as being threatened because there's just so much space there. But is it going through the same sort of thing that we've been seeing in this country?
Yeah, in a different kind of way. Australia is, is the world's biggest island. It's the most fragile continent. Until 200 years ago, no hard-footed animal, no hoofed beast had ever been on the island. So we've lost more species in 200 years than any other place in the world. So it's an endangered place just because of its peculiarity.
An Australian journalist suggested recently that you'd never really learn to put on the second skin that protects you from the elements of fame. So is it a relief for you to come to this country where people don't recognize you on the street?
Yeah, a little bit of anonymity is nice. It sort of strips you of the sort of self-consciousness that you're forced into by being well-known. So it's nice to be a no-account Antipodean writer,
Are you writing now or thinking about writing while you travel?
No, I can't write when I'm traveling, and I can barely think about it. I'm lucky if I can read. Everything grinds to a halt while I'm traveling. I'm sort of in no man's land,
Tim Winton, one of Australia's greatest writers, maybe one of the world's greatest writers, thank you so much for talking about your latest book. The new story is called The Turning, published by Scribner. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Leonard.
Thank you.